Who all was living in Atlanta or the area 10 years ago, back in 2014? We had Snowmageddon, Snowpocalypse, whatever you want to call it, January of 2014. Atlanta was just shut down. You could watch you can go back now and watch a time-lapse video on Google Maps where the roads go from, you know, green stands for traffic's flowing, yellow is slowing down, and red is stopped. And within hours, it just was a total gridlock. Did you guys experience that on the east side here in Athens and all that? No. Atlanta was outrageous. I remember the weather wasn't that cold. I drove up about 2 o'clock to go get a chiropractic appointment in Duluth, a lot further north than Norcross, where we meet in Atlanta. And my wife was like, "Jonathan, there's a storm coming. You shouldn't go." You know, we've been married about a year. And I was like, "Bridget, it never snows that much here. Okay, it's no big deal. I'll take your car." She's like, "You should take your truck, your four-wheel drive truck." "No, I'll take the Mazda. It's better gas." She's like, "Well, you should bring a coat." "Ah, I'm fine." I wore a t-shirt. This is like, I probably left at 12 o'clock. I get out of my appointment at around 2, and it's already starting to snow. It dumps, what, 3 or 4 inches? And then all of a sudden the temperatures drop, the snow melts, and then it freezes. It took me hours. I probably left at 2 o'clock. I ran out of gas. All the stations running out of gas. I ended up having to shuffle my way home in nothing but a t-shirt in 17-degree weather. It took me hours. Now, the secret to staying warm in a t-shirt, 17 degrees, I've found out 3 other times in my life in the mountains, mountaineering and doing ultramarathons. You got to keep your heart rate up around 165 or so to keep from getting hypothermia. So that's what I did. I shuffled and ran and shuffled and ran home. When I got back, we live at the top of a big hill. All the cyclists, which Mr. Holiday would appreciate, struggle to get past our house. You know, this is where they want to stop and take a break on all my boulders in the front. So with ice coming up from 75 for 2 miles to our house, I passed a string of cars, hundreds of cars, just spun out every direction. When I got there, my wife was in the front yard serving coffee and food and to all these strangers passing by. And I told her on the phone, don't let anybody in the house. You know, it looks dangerous. Mostly men, right? No men in the house. So when I got there, I pitched in and helped out as well. We ended up having a number of people stay with us that night. I jumped in my four-wheel drive truck, put on a coat, went to Home Depot and got a pallet of sand and tow ropes. And they were allowing people to stay at Home Depot as well. So I stayed up all night working to get people to Home Depot, or some stayed at our house. But it was my first experience ever having to actually practice philoxenia, which is the Greek word for hospitality in the Bible. Now, for a moment, it felt like something out of the ancient world, when hospitality wasn't just about dinner parties. It was a life-saving duty. And that's exactly what it was sometimes in ancient times. In the Old Testament, we won't go get into the Hebrew words, but it was about love for the stranger. And in ancient times, you wouldn't have had all these hotels and restaurants everywhere. So if you're traveling and you knock on someone's door way out in the country, they were sort of expected to give your animals food and water and maybe give you a place to stay. If they didn't have a place in the house, you might stay in the manger or the barn. But it was imperative. It was part of the culture. And when you crossed over their threshold, you were under their protection. That was practicing love for strangers. Philoxenia. Now, today's hospitality is different. Like, we don't, especially even in the New Testament, in today's modern times, it's pretty difficult to just invite strangers into your home, right? I wouldn't recommend you do that. In most cases, it can be very dangerous. But we are called to live openly and generously. Again, there's a difference. The Old Testament practice of philoxenia was somewhat different than the New Testament. In the New Testament, it seemed to focus more on hospitality to brethren. You can even reference Galatians 6:10, which says, "So then as we have opportunity, let us do good to everyone, and especially to those who are of the household of faith." And so the New Testament church was forming those bonds. When they would travel, they would stay with one another. Even in worldwide, when I was growing up, everyone would stay with, if you were traveling, you didn't have to get a hotel. There was always someone to stay with. I'll reference Hebrews 13:2. Hebrews 13:2 reads, "Do not forget to show hospitality to strangers, for by doing so, some have shown hospitality to angels without knowing it." You remember the account of Abraham. I won't reference the scripture, but the account of Abraham running out to meet the strangers as they were traveling to give them water and food. Well, that would be an example of they turned out to not be human beings. How many times, you know, have we perhaps entertained angels without knowing it? So my purpose today is to remind us that hospitality is a reflection of God's love, philoxenia, love for stranger, but also love for brethren. And whether we host in our homes or, let's say, our local church hall, we have a part in making people feel welcomed and valued. I'll give you an example. You guys all live way here on the east side, so it's for me to come to dinner, it might take 2 hours on a Friday night. So I've never been to Mr. Holiday's house for dinner, for example, but every time I come in the door, he walks up, he greets me, how are you doing? Hey, song man, thank you for coming to these songs. So he takes ownership as a host and extends hospitality to me to make me feel welcome here, even though I don't know that I'm a guest in the church, but I'm sort of a guest at this congregation because my home congregation is in Atlanta. So that's him practicing hospitality in reality instead of just in theory. So my first point is that hospitality is a biblical expectation and a spiritual blessing. I almost went so far as to say it was a command. It's not one of the Ten Commandments. My wife went back and forth on this. So we're going to call it a biblical expectation or an instruction. Romans 12, verse 13 reads, "Share with the Lord's people who are in need." So practice hospitality. I was on a car ride with someone in another one of the Churches of God last night who was a pro tennis player years ago. And, you know, he didn't become a professional tennis player without practicing for thousands and thousands of hours. It's something we have to practice to get better at. 1 Peter 4, verse 9 reads, "Offer hospitality to one another without grumbling." So, in both Old and New Testaments, opening your home was considered essential to righteous living, especially for elders. For elders, it was even mentioned as a requirement to be an elder, to practice hospitality, love for strangers, love and service to the brethren. So it's something we may not talk about a lot from, say, the pulpit. You're not going to hear a lot of messages on it. I think there's only about a dozen on the entire ECG website, of which I think there's like 35,000 sermons and sermonettes and split sermons. So 12, roughly a dozen, is not a lot. But it's still something we need to remember to embrace as a way to practice God's love and to grow closer. It's interesting it says offer hospitality to one another without grumbling, because there's, I guess in ancient times, it would be expensive. Things weren't readily available. It would be expensive. It's not always convenient. It took effort and time, especially for the women. I can't remember the last time my dad ever cooked dinner for 50 people at our house growing up. It was always my mom. But it's important. Even when traveling, you know, when my wife was in college, she moved away to Cal Poly, California, and there wasn't a United Church of God anywhere within hours. So her dad told her, just there's a David Hume group there locally. So she went to David Hume's group, and she met some wonderful people. She actually ended up living with a family, the Sigelskis, but they would invite her over on Friday nights, and she'd have a place to go. So some of the young adults in here have gone off to college. When you're at college, you might be there with no other folks in the church. When I went to Auburn, I was blessed to follow like a dozen church kids that went to Auburn. When I went down there, there were six of us. Four of us all lived in one two-bedroom house. So we had our own group. But a lot of people, like my wife, she was alone. She was in a dorm with all these athletes. She was a track runner. And, you know, Friday nights can be quite lonely. So it's incredibly important to invite these young people over for dinners, because you don't want them to be isolated or lonely. If they're not with church people on the Sabbath, they might end up with negative influences by society. So my second point is that meals create deep sacred connection. Today, and science confirms what Scripture shows. Sharing a meal, it lowers stress, it boosts trust hormones like oxytocin, and it builds a sense of belonging, it builds a sense of community. I can mention last night, I was invited to a dinner. My wife went early. I had to stay and handle some air conditioning crises on a job site for not my own house, but another property. But by the time I got out, it was probably 7:30. With the rain, it was going to take an hour and a half. I was going to get there at least 9:30, missing most of the dinner. But I felt like I had to show up. I felt like, what would I be if I skip out on receiving someone else's hospitality, and then I get up the next morning and speak about hospitality? So I told my buddy Juan, I said, man, we gotta go. We were both late. Both our wives and families were already gone. So we went. But, you know, Jesus often taught during or after a meal. He used meals as an opportunity to do that. My dad, in all of his counseling over the years, would use meals publicly or public places or even in a private home as an opportunity to counsel with people and visit with them. So he's not the only one. I won't reference all of the scriptures, but you know there's the account of Luke 7 with Simon the Pharisee, where Jesus dined at his house, and there were some powerful teaching moments that occurred there. So meals were central to Christ's ministry, not just to fill the stomachs, but to feed them spiritually. Talk about the bread of life. My third point is that excuses are normal, right? We can all make excuses why it's difficult to host someone in your home or to be maybe outgoing and greet strangers at church. It might be uncomfortable for some of us, but that's not the point. We have to overcome these shortcomings. And a lot of this changes over time. So my mom, when she was young, she hosted a lot of dinners, a lot of families. And at church, she was the first one to walk up to someone when they were new. Now she's pretty much confined to a wheelchair. She doesn't really go up to a lot of people. She has a hard time communicating. She has a hard time hearing you. She doesn't have a lot of energy to speak. So that season in her life has passed. And so some of us are exempt from the practice of hospitality. She can no longer have people over at her house. She just can't handle the noise and the stimulation. So that some of us will fall into that category as we age. But for those that can, we should. So, some people may feel unqualified. They might say, my place is too small, or I'm not a good cook, or I'm too busy, or I don't have the money. But hospitality isn't about showing off. It's just about showing up and creating a space for people. I would say when I was growing up, our first house was like $26,000. It was a small house, very humble. We still had all kinds of folks over from church. Second house was probably just a little bigger. Our third house, a little bigger. And we always hosted. And I kept growing up as a kid, I got to see that. I got to see how my mom and my dad modeled hospitality, serving others. I got to listen to all the conversations. I learned a lot at the dinner table. Even in secular society, I saw a talk between Bill Clinton and George Bush up on stage at an event. They probably talked for 2 hours. This was probably 15 years ago. And at one point, Bill Clinton, who we don't really admire as an especially moral man, but Bill Clinton said he learned how to be a president largely at the dinner table with his family. All the aunts and uncles and cousins. He learned how to treat people, how to listen, how to have conversation. He learned the art of hospitality. And you'd have to admit that he was a likable person. He was a likable president. Even if I don't agree with some of his life decisions or policies. So even if you're not in the church, you can practice hospitality. But we need to practice it truly from a place of godly love. And not only just for our friends or our brethren, but for, on occasion, strangers as well. So, You know, to be welcome at someone's table is one of the oldest and most meaningful acts of human connection. And again, if you don't have the location for it, like your home is too small, you can be a host or a hostess at church. You can be a door greeter. You can bring a dish to potluck. Or you could say, hey, if it's the fall or the spring and the weather's nice, let's meet at a park. I've done this in Atlanta. Let's meet at the Chattahoochee National Park down the street. Everybody gets barbecue and we sit at picnic tables. And you can kind of host a dinner like that after church. Proverbs 15, verse 17 says, or reads, better a small serving of vegetables with love than a fattened calf with hatred. So along those same lines, you know, there's always Costco. If you guys had those $10 pizzas at Costco, you just grab them, throw them in the oven. I don't know, what, 20 minutes later, you've got a pizza. My kids love it. I'm not saying it's healthy or good for you, but it does taste good. So there's a lot of ways to overcome the barriers of not feeling comfortable or confident with hosting your brethren or your friends or your family or your neighbors. But there's just so much we can do at church to take an active role. Again, as I mentioned, Mr. Holiday coming up and greeting me as soon as I get here. My final point is that America really seems to be losing this hospitality. You know, decades ago, let's say pre-1950 even, everyone's listening to one radio station, maybe two, one or two TV channels. There's less distractions. If you broke down in your car, someone's going to stop and pick you up. Even when I was a kid, I could hitchhike safely all over Wyoming and Idaho. I didn't have a ride to church once in Wyoming, and I hitchhiked all the way to church to Du Bois. Got picked up by one family and the next family, all because the traveling minister at the time didn't come by. He was a friend of mine, but didn't want to drive, you know, an hour out of his way, so I hitchhiked. You could safely do that in a lot of locations years ago. I don't recommend hitchhiking today, but in ancient times, I'm sure it was commonplace. Jump on a wagon or a donkey or a mule. A survey in 2019 found that nearly 1 in 3 American adults hadn't invited anyone over in the past year. 1 in 3. I compare that to, let's say, Jewish Sabbath dinners. I've got a number of Jewish friends. My neighbor, before she passed, she was Jewish. And the Orthodox Jewish community, they do a good job of getting together with all their family and friends every Friday night for dinner. It's like a mandatory dinner. In my wife, in our home, my wife feels like it's a sacred night. I've got to be there. I can't be late. Got to be ready to go for Sabbath dinner. I don't think that the Jewish community practices a lot of the Old Testament sort of focus on philoxenia, which is the love of strangers, because they're more, the Jewish faith or community is more about bringing, I would say, a little more insular. They're not promoting the religion and recruiting like the Mormons or the Baptists. But we're to not only just focus on having friends and family over, but finding ways in your life to extend love to strangers. It doesn't mean you have to go out in the streets and say, hey, come over. That may be dangerous. But the church should be the last place to let this concept go of hospitality. And remember, we don't need everything to be perfect before hosting. We don't need open doors. I mean, we need open doors and open hearts. So, in conclusion, hospitality is one of the most human and divine things we can extend. It can turn strangers into friends. You may meet someone on the plane or at an airport. You're stuck there on a layover for 6 hours. And by the time you're done, you're exchanging phone numbers and you keep in touch. Hospitality opens hearts. And it reflects the kingdom of God, a place where everyone has the opportunity to eventually have a seat at the table.